Who should we be going to?
Well, we've got Gabriella Peralta and we've got Phil Lynas.
Exactly. And one of them, and probably both of them, needs to deliver the weather, but I'm going to let you actually choose who is it. Is it Phil or is it Gabriella? Who is actually going to deliver the weather for Lincoln?
Oh, you can't do this to me.
Ben, you must become a man, my son. This is the important thing.
Well, to be fair, we had Phil on last night, so I'll do it for Gabriella today.
Gabriella, cue you for the weather for Lincoln.
Thank you. The weather for Lincoln today is highs of 19 degrees centigrade, lows of 12 degrees centigrade. It's a windy and overcast day with a few sunny spells.
Setting the standard. Very good, very solid, very impressive from that particular perspective. Jingle and I don't will come through in a few seconds, but Phil Lynas, it's now time for you, good self, to provide either concurrence with respect to that, or indeed, alternate concurrence with respect to the weather for Lincoln from Los Angeles and your view.
Am I wrong? Do I keep hearing somewhere in that booth, which right now is home to a wall of handsome, a male-only cast of co-presenters, do I keep hearing an angel earning its wings? I swear.
You are so right, and that angel is Tessa Leanne Snart. Yeah, bless her heart,
who is
listening to us from that point of view, and she has tweeted to said, so I'm tuned in and listening. I unfortunately missed the show last night, but looking forward to the program this morning. Please say hello to Phil, Richard, and Ian for me. Sorry, no mention, Ben. Or Christian.
Right in the back.
I'll be listening out for Carrington later in the show too. Actually, Carrington will be featured later on this evening, Tessa, if you're listening from that point of view. Oh, and Ben too. She's just so
sick. Thank you, Tessa.
I must take grave issue with Gabriella's forecast of the weather. I don't think it's going to get above 18 degrees. I don't think it's going to hit the 19. But why do we bicker over a degree, Gabriella? Why do we let 1 degree come? I mean, the point is it's going to be overcast. The point is that you're looking at kind of a lot of rain on Saturday. But the great news is you're going to be starting next week with a beautiful 70 American degrees Fahrenheit. That's what you have to look forward to.
Wow.
We need the optimism here,
Except, of course, on Wednesday, when day one of the Lincolnshire Show, I gather rain is forecast.
It's all good. It's all part of the fun.
Exactly. That's the important thing. Okay, Gabriella, last week, of course, we had, as Phil was saying last night, the ambush scenario of Stephanie Romaszewski actually coming in and giving him advice on why he should give up coffee. His retort, actually, 7 days later, was quite clearly echoed yesterday, that without the coffee, he probably wouldn't be able to do these morning editions. So, yeah, it's the classic sort of quandary from that point of view. But Gabriella, what have you been getting up to since we last spoke?
What have I been doing? It's been 2 weeks, hasn't it?
Yes.
I have been at work. I did an escape room, which was fun, over the weekend. Spoiler, I didn't escape in time.
Just dial back there, because I think Phil might have also sort of been a bit... An escape film, did you say?
Room.
Oh, an escape room.
Yeah. What you do is you go in the room and they give you a bunch of tasks and you have to try and escape within.
Isn't that just called university? Christian, have you heard of this?
I have found myself, by the way, Alex. I have found myself making movies that I've tried to escape, but I've yet to try an escape room. Are they good fun? They're good
lots
fun.
Of fun. Yeah, because you go in, and this time I went as in one called the experiment, so they put us in lab coats, we're dressed in goggles as scientists, and you're given a bunch of clues. So you enter the room, and this one was all like white and black checkerboard room, and you've got a bunch of things on the wall, you've got a bunch of random objects, and you have to figure out how to unlock the chest, get the key to leave the room in time. This one was particularly difficult. And you had lasers and everything, so it was a lot of fun.
How do you get yourself into that?
What's the purpose in life? Why would you wish to choose to do this, Gabriella? What is the meaning?
The third one I've done in the past year.
Right. So clearly this is not just a reporting thing. This is something that's clearly... This is extraordinary.
My dad done one a few weeks ago.
No, this is for fun.
Right.
is what I do in my bedtime.
I want to do a report. Alex, if next time I come to Lincoln, we have got to track down the closest escape room to the university. And we have to do a report. We'll record it, and we'll do a report of Alex and I trying to get out of an escape room.
Do it in the studio, couldn't you? Yeah, I reckon. And it's a bit of a live broadcast.
Ben, you said your father had done one.
Yeah, he done one a few weeks ago. Did it with his work colleagues. So, yeah, it was a little teamwork task. And they didn't escape, no.
See, I always thought it was just paintballing and things. This is obviously
It's probably a new concept, I don't really know.
I've never heard of one before.
Escape room.
Oh, my goodness. If it was an escape room that Alex and I were locked in, that required anything other than the knowledge of 1960s television series or 1970s love songs, we would be sunk.
Or, and this was like the FIFA World Cup 2018.
Day one today. Exactly.
Which I'm sure you did research on last night, Phil.
Precisely. Are you still sticking with wins for England and Belgium?
Has Belgium not already won?
Oh, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun focusing on this whole system. Very briefly, Gabriella, what's Frodo's state of consciousness?
I think he's asleep somewhere in another room.
Okay. Will you be watching the world?
I don't hear movement.
No, he could be astral traveling again. Will you be watching the World Cup, or is it a case of no? Gibraltar have failed to qualify again.
I won't be watching the World Cup, which probably means Frodo won't be watching the World Cup.
Right.
So I won't give him the opportunity.
No.
But there is World Cup fever in Gibraltar.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of Spanish supporters? Yeah, only kidding. I expected total silence then. It said so. A political point. You could hear the sort of dust balls there. Okay, Richard's up and around. Ben, last two questions for Gabriella, please.
Gabriella, have you enjoyed your telephone litfest today?
Yes, thank you.
Excellent.
We haven't forgotten about that Adam West era Batman tale from Phil. That'll come up in a matter of moments after we've had a little dash of John Williams taking us through to Richard Fitzwilliams, who'll be talking about another dinosaur and photographs of that dinosaur taken with various other dinosaurs. Actually, oh, that's politician. Sorry, G7. Sorry, I thought it was him.
Oh, excellent. And Gabriella, will you join us again next week or soonish?
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully next week.
Good.
Actually, it might well be another fortnight, because next week, of course, Lincolnshire Show Day 2. So I know, sorry, which is another big escape room, although I like to refer to it an escape field. You see, if Jeremy Vine on Radio 2 effectively had that kind of response and sort of built the whole thing through just before Richard Fitzwilliams comes on for one of his regular slots on that other station, it's BBC Radio 2, we'd actually appreciate, you know, the value so much more. Not that we don't appreciate him on Siren Radio, because obviously his weekly slot on Siren Radio is just awesome. Isn't that right, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Oh, how kind. I didn't know you'd heard it.
I didn't expect to hear it, but every so often I like to check out what the competition are doing, so I was on a long drive. I thought, I'll just tune into Radio 2, and lo and behold, discussing Trump in so many marvellous ways. And hasn't he done well in North Korea? I'm sorry, Phil Leonis, I know you've got an alternative viewpoint on that, but, you know, he's done splendidly well so far. Maybe it was all just a show, Richard.
Well, I mean, if I've only got 12 minutes, all I can say is that there is a lot to say about this. I mean, you do have to welcome the fact it's taken place, and I have to admit that previous administrations, their policies towards North Korea did not work. whether this will, I mean, it's one of the most bizarre meetings, I think, that has ever happened between heads of state. And quite honestly, there is a tremendous amount that we still don't know that has to be worked out. I mean, he's made a concession already regarding the exercises. I mean, I watched it, or some of it. It was absolutely extraordinary. You do have to welcome it. Having said that, I have to say I was talking to a Trump supporter last night, and she was talking about the Nobel Prize for Peace. Quite frankly, I would also talk about if there was such a prize for lying, I think he already would have won it.
Whoa. Strong words. I mean, I'm sure, Phil, you'd disagree heartily with that, in the same way as Tessa's just sent in saying, sorry, she didn't realise Facebook would make a bleep noise. Tessa, just feel free to make it bleep as much as possible. I would have said it was more a ping noise, personally, as opposed to a bleep. Or, as Phil said, more kind of angel getting its wings. Anyway, any thoughts on the photograph, first and foremost, Phil Linus? Has it spread to the States? Have you seen that photograph which Richard was comparing to Caravaggio? I believe, is that right, Richard? Caravaggio?
Yes, it was. I mean, in fact, it was, I have to say that there was some debate as to whether or not it more resembled a Renaissance painting or a Baroque painting, and I think probably the latter, since the Baroque works had more, they were displaying more movement and more action, and that was where Caravaggio came in. There are differences, obviously, but it was the movement of the figures. It really was quite extraordinary that we should see, in fact, such tremendous hostility. Of course, it was leaked by Merkel's photographer.
Well, exactly. I mean, Trump at the G7, who's who in Merkel's photo, presumably we're familiar with this particular image.
Yes.
I mean,
the photo did, yes. Of course, the photo spread here like wildfire. I'm struck by trying to figure out what the perfect segue will be between the conversation about Trump and the new Jurassic Park movie. I mean, other than the obvious similarity.
It's a Trumposaurus.
Trump and the T-Rex both have tiny little hands. Other than that, I don't know the obvious segue, but I look forward to finding out what it will be.
Oh, I mean, just go for it, Richard. Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, and the G7. Where do you want to take us?
Well, I'm afraid I wouldn't take anyone to Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom.
What?
I'm sorry to be so depressing on it, because I do like the series and I was very fond of some of its predecessors. Mm-hmm. Set on the island of Isla Nublar off the Pacific coast, the theme park has been abandoned and a team arrives to retrieve DNA from the remains of a dinosaur and is attacked, and the Mosasaurus escapes initially. And I just saw we had a couple of dinosaurs when we could have had one, and it could have been more exciting. And even at the start now, the Senate hearing debates whether the dinosaurs should be saved from volcanic eruption. Dr. Malcolm, played by Jeff Goldblum, says they should be left to die because of the way they were created and cloned. Claire creates, this is Claire Dearing, played by Bryce Dallas Howard, who makes a pretty good fist of things. The Dinosaur Protection Group, the Senate rejects the rescue. She's contacted by Ben Lockwood, played by the excellent James Cromwell, who is John Hammond's former partner who plans a new sanctuary to house the dinosaurs. And, of course, need to recruit Owen Grady, played by Chris Pratt, who is the one who can communicate with them. He's the former Velociraptor trainer. The rescue group with the mercenaries arriving on Isla Nublar has a totally different plan, and things, of course, tend to go a little wrong. Volcanoes tend to erupt, and all sorts of difficulties subsequently occur. Considering what the intention is, the Toby Jones is always a good villain, and here he certainly plays one, as to what is supposed to happen to these unfortunate creatures. I have to say that the problem with this movie for me was, I thoroughly enjoyed the dinosaurs themselves roaring away, but as well as the roaring of dinosaurs, I do wish we would have had a script or a story that actually built up tension, because the problem with this movie is that it's terribly slack. When you're wandering around with dinosaurs rushing past you and you have a homage to a previous Jurassic Park movie when you're in one of those extraordinary bubbles that move. Well, fair enough. The problem was you could have got so much more tension, so much more fun out of this movie. It's rather like one of those movies where you're escaping and the explosions come behind you and you literally get onto a ship, the mercenary ship as it happens, when you're getting out of the island which is about to explode. And the way the explosions go just behind you, you just escape and so forth. It's those sort of scenes that could have been done so much better because we've seen so much of the sort of thing before. And I frankly found it rather silly and predictable. But to be honest, I've spoken to a couple of people who've taken their children who are wild about it. So there it is.
Richard, you've got the image of Richard Attenborough's character, John Hammond. That's actually in portraiture. She's there. He's there, I should say. You've got the wonderful genetically engineered child. You've got all sorts of... You've even got the sacrificial goat, which has become a staple of all the Jurassic movies. Let's sacrifice a goat. A bit harsh, but never mind.
If John Hammond was alive, he'd turn in his grave.
Well, Alex, I think we're at cross purposes here. I think Richard misunderstands. I mean, we've heard about the sacrificial goat. We've heard about the boring dinosaurs. We've heard about the mindless explosions. But enough about the G7.
Nice.
What about the Lost World movie? That's what we want to...
Well, you see, that's Phil's training as a stand-up comedian.
You saw that coming a mile away.
It was happening. I mean, I was almost tempted to say, as just like the Happy Prince in Oscar Wilde's line, the classic narrative, Trump is just giving everything away. And so is Kim Jong-un. And they're just recognizing the joy and happiness. But quickly, before we go on to the Happy Prince, Christian, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I would give it a good solid 9 out of 10. I thought it was very good and equivalent to Solo.
Where was the tension, Alex? Where was the excitement? What was the fun? Have you seen it?
Yes.
He's told you.
Exactly. Christian.
I wasn't really bothered about it to begin with. No. I saw the first one.
Ben?
I'd be interested. The other ones I actually really liked. I really enjoyed
them. So did Richard, obviously.
Yeah, but like Richard, I enjoyed the tension as well. That was always something that...
No spoilers, but the ending opens its way to a whole new Planet of the Apes-like sequel.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. And it may be very good. And certainly, if it's like War for the Planet of the Apes, if that series, I mean, that's definitely to be welcomed.
Exactly.
Yes, fair enough.
Phil, will you be saying Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom? Will it be forming part of the Chilpack Hollywood oeuvre, or maybe even the Los Angeles Breakfast Club? Let's talk about Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Okay, now look, when I'm part of a 93-year-old social organization, I take the reference to dinosaurs to be a little bit offensive. So I may end up seeing it if, in order to discuss it on the show, who knows? But I'm leaning against it. There's so much to see right now.
And I wouldn't put it at the height of top of your priority.
Richard, Ron Howard did a fantastic job with Solo. His daughter, Bryce Dallas Howard, has done a fantastic job in Jurassic World.
Anyway. Ron Howard certainly, I thought, did a wonderful job with Solo, and I wish the box office receipts had reflected this. But, of course, they do put the bar very high since the movie was so expensive, and it, with all the publicity, it has to recoup.
It was so high because they hired Ron Howard to come and redo the whole movie, and they didn't need to do that. That's why the box office was so high, because he reshot 75% of the movie, and I can only imagine how much better the original version was from talented, innovative, interesting filmmakers.
Well, I have to say I enjoyed what I saw, but you know the problem when I think maybe they're releasing too many Star Wars movies. Something's gone wrong. I mean, word of mouth, I'd hope, would spread.
Richard, until we actually have a daily Star Wars movie release, that's 365 per year, or 366 a leap year, even then, it can never be too many Star Wars movies. Let's move on to Oscar Wilde, or rather his latter years, and indeed The Happy Prince, which I suspect you might sort of think is slightly more worthwhile than Jurassic World, but I could be wrong.
Well, I mean, I wish you'd taken a bet on it, because it's set. I mean, this is actually, to be serious, it's Rupert Everett took about a decade to make this movie, and he's really, really done it well. It's a viscerally powerful film. It chronicles the final part of Oscar Wilde's life. He's in exile in France after the brutal imprisonment which followed his conviction for homosexuality in 1895. That, alas, broke his health, and we see a lot of the story in flashbacks, both depicting the hell he went through after his sentencing and also the way he was lionized before his fall with his plays. He's still tragically obsessed with Bosie, Lord Alfred Douglas, who fatefully remains the love of his life. And Everett triumphed as Oscar on stage in the Judith Kiss. This was a David Hare play where he played opposite Freddie Fox as Bosie. He wrote and directed this film and plays Wilde, and I think this is the performance of his life. Stephen Fry always said, and I wasn't that impressed with the film Wilde, that he was born to play Wilde, but I think it was Everett, because this is a portrait of a genius destroyed by a hypocritical society and its brutal laws, and also, of course, by Bosie, on whom he's fixated. And in France, he's a dead man walking. There's no creativity. He faces slights and mockery. He's got the sense of dignity. He quips he's dying beyond his means. The problem is he hasn't got any money. And when Bosie actually joins him and they continue their relationship going to Naples together, where they separate, Wilde literally is reduced to penury. This is a poignant performance. There's a physicality that really matches the torments that Wilde's experiencing. He's an aging penniless roué and has tragically short time left, and we suffer with him. An excellent performance as Bosie by Colin Morgan, not an actor I know. He's intoxicatingly beautiful, as well as demonic and temperamental as he was. Also, a moving performance by Emily Watson as Constance, Wilde's wife. She's also a casualty of the fateful fall from grace. And he's helped by his faithful friends, Reggie Turner, a very fine performance by Colin Firth, and Robbie Ross, played by Edwin Thomas, who has unrequited love for Wilde, part of the tragedy of the story. And the period touches are superb. The visuals give the film a wonderfully authentic feel, and the music gives it such heart. The song that occurs several times, "The Boy I Love Is Sitting in the Gallery," very, very, very touching. I absolutely loved this film. It's a mesmerizing tribute to the memory of an icon.
But it's no Jurassic World. The Happy Prince was reviewed by The Independent as basically being a moving and surprising biopic of Oscar Wilde. There was, of course, by Rupert Everett, as you said, Richard. I'm not sure whether Chilpack Hollywood has actually had a top 10 biopics in your movie selection.
Now you're throwing a gauntlet. I always enjoy a gauntlet being thrown.
Mm-hmm.
My question, Richard, is you use the word tragic, and of course one would expect that word to be used, but I even go beyond that with Oscar Wilde's, you know, personal story. It lends itself to the bleak, really. I mean, it's a truly bleak story, and I'm wondering if in the midst of that bleakness, does this film manage to maintain some sense of Wilde's wit? Even in the midst of bleakness.
It does, because firstly, there are the quips about either this wallpaper goes or I do when he dies in a dingy Parisian apartment, or indeed that he's dying beyond his means when he hasn't got any money. But you have quite a lot of flashbacks to the fact that he was so successful as a playwright, and you do get a certain amount of it, but equally, of course, it is focusing on a period when, firstly, he couldn't be creative. He's mocked by Bosie, even when Bosie has a lot of money, he won't show it, because he is no longer, because he was just so destroyed by this monstrous court case. Bought, of course, I mean, the actual story, where Wilde sued the Marquess of Queensbury, Bosie's father, and then subsequently was tried himself twice, is, of course, legend, but there's no question that you get a sense of someone who's great, who's been destroyed, and the way he's struggling. I thought it was profoundly moving. I think that we'll find Rupert Everett on lists for top nominations for amazing portrayal here.
But perhaps a little bit too soon for the Academy Awards. I won't say anything else at this particular stage, apart from, will you be checking out the Happy Prince, Ben Lewis?
Happy too.
Nice. Good. Christian?
Yeah, I've heard about the film a while ago, so I think I was meaning to go watch it.
Better than hearing about it a while ago. Sorry, it's pun heaven here for that particular word you've done.
I can't believe I didn't think of that one.
No, it's, you're just a journalism student. Why would you think about puns, for goodness sake, Christian? Come in level three, that's fine. And Phil, I take it you'll be checking it out.
Absolutely. Yes, I don't know when it comes out here, but I'm doing some research right now.
No time to talk about people falling off their horse at the Trooping of the Colour or anything else at this particular time. We're going to have to do a pre-record on that because next week, Richard, you'll be at Royal Ascot. We'll be at the Lincolnshire Show. We might not be actually live again until 2 weeks have actually passed by. It's that kind of time of year, really.
Trooping the Colour, brilliantly done. Indeed, yes, very sad. Lord Guthrie fell off his horse. Also, we welcome the Duke and Duchess of
And let's Suffolk. Let's hope. I mean, back in the day, historians of various folk would actually say, ah, falling off the horse, that is an omen. That's a Brexit omen, that is.
Now, you're opening up a topic on which I could expand, but I just suspect you mightn't have the time. It is interesting. One thing is very interesting. I don't think Brexit is going to happen in anything like the way that those who voted unwisely...
If Nigel Farage is listening, he's going to be an unhappy bunny listening to you for those words. He might have been a fan before that. Who knows? Ben, sorry, were you going to say something?
I was going to say as well, there was also the first Sikh soldier in the troop.
Exactly, which is very good. It's nice to finish on a final sequence. Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have indeed.
Back again in a fortnight?
I look forward to it.
Enjoy Royal Ascot. Phil Linus, have you enjoyed the connection today?
Oh, I guess as a representative of the nation that actually underwent the first Brexit, this is the time when I'm expected to leave. Is that right?
No, feel free to stick around. We're going to feature on Father's Day, but as ever, it's a delight, and we still haven't heard the Adam West story.
Well, we'll save that, I guess, for next time. Exactly. But I've had a great time, and I wanted to just point out that not too early for the Academy Awards. The Happy Prince comes out on October 5th, just heading into award season here in America.
That's good news. That's good news. And, so, of course, there can be exceptions. You remember the Hurt Locker.
Just don't get started on that one.
Can of worms opened. But anyway, I'm very excited about that. And we've had discussions, some of my colleagues and I, in the recent past about how Rupert Everett is viewed as not having had the career he should have been allowed to have. So I think there is a great amount of goodwill built up waiting for this movie.
Obviously, what he needs is to have a museum showing all his Rupert Everett stuff and then march all the Academy Award people through the sort of museum of music of Rupert Everett in Hollywood. So
all they need to do is to see this wonderful movie.
And I like it.
Phil, we'll speak again next week.
Excellent.
Senses have been stripped, and my hands can't feel to grip, and my toes too numb to step. Wait only for my boot heels to be wandering. I'm ready to go anywhere. I'm ready for to fade onto my own parade. Cast your dancing spell my way. I promise. to go under it. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy yet. There ain't no place I'm
in masculinity, a whole range of factors, and as we approach Father's Day, maybe we need to obviously take time out to actually appreciate the importance, as opposed to making dads the butt of all jokes in all sorts of ways, etc. To address some research that's been released by the Royal Mail that shows that dads really value the simple pleasures traditionally afforded to mums, we're delighted to welcome two fabulous folk. First of all, Head of Campaigns at Royal Mail, Mark Street. How are you, Mark?
I'm very well, thanks for having us on.
And the coordinator, the genius behind Dad Blog UK, that'd be John Adams. How are you, John?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm fine. Thanks.
Excellent. John, you're the dad in a not-so-typical family. Talk to us about that particular life choice and how you obviously came up with the Dad Blog UK scenario.
Yes, so 7 years ago, my wife and I, we were looking at our childcare and how it sort of worked out, and we decided that our daughter needed a bit more time with the parents because we were both working full-time. It was a very simple, practical decision. My wife earned more, and so we decided that I would take the hit, as it were, give up my job, and I would concentrate on running family and home. And I started blogging about it, and that brings us up, you know, to this day. Blog's going really well, and I'm delighted to be here today to talk about this survey results with Royal Mail.
Absolutely. Now, Mark, let's come to you now with respect to this particular research. I would have thought that with the ultimate gift being a hug from the kids followed by a family day out, Royal Mail could just take it easy, can't they, really?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you know, a lot of this is about the perception that dads aren't really that bothered, and I think, you know, that what came across in the research is that dads are actually a lot more emotional than people think. And, you know, one of the other things that you missed out in your intro there was the importance of sending cards and that emotional aspect of having that handwritten note from your kids. Me, myself, I've got a card from my daughter, which she put together when she was five, and it's next to my bed, and it's been there for these last 7 years. So it gives you some sort of insight that, you know, beneath this brooding exterior, we're actually just soppy little boys.
It's not quite the same, presumably, as a hashtag and thumbs up on social media, basically, a card.
Cause well, obviously, you know, the thing about cards is you can keep them. You can put them on your mantelpiece. You can put them in the attic. You can't really do the same with emails.
It's true. John, you've produced a 15-point guide to 21st century Father's Day from that perspective. And I think number one of those things is basically dad sometimes just wants to do exactly what mum actually wants to do. You know, it's that whole notion of maybe arts and crafts, etc. So perhaps we do need to look at that as opposed to, I don't know, maybe the parachute jump and other things that were lined up.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And of course, I live in a non-typical family. It's me that stays at home with the kids all the time. But for the majority of dads, they are out there, they're working full time. They don't actually have the opportunities to sit down, you know, make, you know, whatever it is that the kids want to make. It could be cards. It could be, like, my daughter's really into making rugs at the minute, or knitting or sewing or anything. Dads don't get to do this stuff. So you just, you know, give it a bit of thought. Dad may want to do nothing more than to sit down with the kids and some paints and make a great mess. And I'd recommend doing it as well.
A breakfast in bed of apple and honey. In fact, an apple and honey sandwich I thought was quite interesting. Is that personal experience talking there, or is that a general trend we're looking for?
Oh, no, that is personal experience. Again, that's my eldest daughter. She will go into the kitchen sometimes to make me breakfast in bed. Drives my wife absolutely insane. But I just want the kids to go wild. And when she comes up with a tray with, yeah, honey sandwiches covered in sprinkles, you know, it just makes me happy. It makes me smile. It makes memories. And I think, you know, that's partly what Father's Day is about.
You know, there was some other stuff in our research that showed that some of the other gifts that fathers received on Father's Day included a lifetime supply of cashew nuts, lottery tickets, and 10 garden gnomes. So I think there's a bit of precedent there for the unusual.
I was particularly surprised by the 6% who actually sort of responded with they wanted written on novelty pants. extraordinary. Clearly you've got a case of beer at the top of the list from that point of view. Socks, of course, the obligatory world's great dad mug. Were there any surprises from your own point of view, other than obviously the ones we talked about, Mark, in terms of the research?
Well, you know, I think some of those novelty gifts were to be expected. And I think the research is all about encouraging people to do the unexpected, really. You know, to really dig a bit deeper and try and look beneath the surface of the easy gifts that are in the sort of department store section for dads and just try and think out of the box a bit more. I think that's what really came through.
Do you have children yourself, Mark?
I do. I do. One little girl, and she often reaches out of the box for me, actually. And last year we had a massive water pistol fight, which was part of our Father's Day in the back garden, which ended up with me breaking my collarbone. So it wasn't a great Father's Day for me last year.
I suppose you can actually sort of show the bravery as well through the pain and all the other sort of
things. Oh, absolutely. You can imagine. I was screaming like a little girl.
And meanwhile, in the Adams household, presumably Helen and Izzy are currently in the midst of a militaristic style campaign in terms of coordinating Father's Day. As a case of no pressure, girls, just do what you feel is right.
It's no pressure, do what you feel is right, but my youngest, who is absolutely shocking at keeping secrets, has been telling me about the secret Father's Day card that she is making for me, so I know in great detail what I'm going to be receiving. But which is great, because I mean it comes back to this research here, which shows that 7 out of 10 dads who receive a card we'll keep it. And I mean, I keep all of my, I've got all of the Father's Day cards that my kids have given me over the years. I'm looking forward to it. I'm waiting to see just how creative the kids have been.
Well, at least you can breathe a sigh of relief, presumably, that your present doesn't involve water pistols or a trip to A&E, but still.
I certainly have no intention of going to A&E, and I hope we can avoid it.
But it was memorable.
And in terms of finding out further details about what we've been talking about today, presumably, John, we can go directly to Dadblog UK.
You can indeed go to dadbloguk.com, yes, and my 15-point, my hints and tips will also be going on the Royal Mail website, I believe, at about 10 o'clock this morning, so you can go there as well.
And Mark, presumably it's at Royal Mail, the usual Royal Mail website for that as well.
Absolutely, yeah, royalmail.com.
Mark Street, Head of Campaigns at the Royal Mail, and parenting pundit and writer for Dad Blog UK and more, John Adams. Many thanks indeed. Happy Father's Day to come.
Thank you. Thank you.
Wonderful. In the Snart family household, it would seem, spoiler alert here if you're listening, that 2 dustbins will be provided for Father's Day. Apparently, he won't be listening to this. He's going to be too busy working. Well, that's the way. And they're also tidying up the house. So clearly, Lois and Tessa have actually bought 1 bin each for their father. Isn't that wonderful, Ian Lennox? You know, you've got daughters who actually give you 2 bins for... 2 bins for Father's Day. I mean...
Sounds like a load of rubbish to me. Sorry.
Ben, bins as opposed to beer, which is what we talked about yesterday.
Well, the beers won't last very long, and bins
is,
will.
Is for life, exactly. You know, a beer is just for
What's
a moment.
What's a group of bins named out? What are they? It's not a pride of bins.
A refuse of bins, perhaps.
A refuse of bins. Yeah,
apparently they're kitchen bins, very nice kitchen bins.
Oh, well, that's excellent.
Nice. Christian, any thoughts of Father's Day? Would you be having anything in mind?
If I was a father and getting, I'd like the beer in the bins.
Beer in the bins. See what you did there? Exactly. Ian, what was the most creative gift you received from your daughters? Or did you get a card, or did you...
I got lots of cards. It's a terrific one. There's two very funny ones. You know how terrible I am on computers?
No, really?
Yes, really. And one of them sent me a card with a picture of this chap throwing a computer out the window and saying, stupid blooming thing. And it said, the caption said, Dad finally found a way to make the computer go faster. And there's another one where I had an old sort of Remington machine gun typewriter. And it said, it seemed the man at the car boot sale was lying when he told Dad that it had a Pentium 4. And it just got me to a TV. And I was just so terrible at those sort of things.
Well, as long as it works. Now, do you keep your cards?
I've kept those. I put them on the computer, actually, on my Facebook.
Isn't that a bit risky with your computer history? Never mind. Long as they're there, that's the important thing. Tessa gives thumbs up to your idea, Christian. who knows? You could be responsible for health and happiness in Glinton, just outside the joys of Peterborough. Okay, World Cup about to start. Are you looking forward to it, Ian?
To what?
Are you looking forward to the World Cup?
Yes, I think I'll watch a lot of the games. I don't know. I'm getting more enthusiastic about it as it approaches, I suppose.
Like, we all do. But the most important thing is, it's the first time in 2018 you've been able to share the airwaves with our Brighton-supporting extraordinary chap back from his time at Crewe with Bentley before he heads off to another placement in London, Ben Lewis.
Hello.
Hello. So, I mean, you both survived. Brighton survived. Newcastle survived. Brighton actually helped City actually get to 100 points, which was nice. So, but, yes.
I don't think that's what their intention of being in the league, actually.
Yeah, but at least we're not Sunderland fans. At least we're not Sunderland fans. That's the main thing to take away from this.
Well, you know, as I say, when you press the Chris Coleman button, you realise that what life is. It could be a Leeds United fan, of course. I mean, in terms of that Leeds United Liverpool system, I mean, you obviously slightly disappointed with Liverpool's performance, but great comedy value.
Still trying to find the Premier League trophy.
And Leeds, is it a case of you're looking forward to another new manager with great anticipation?
I don't really have much hope. No. I mean, it's like the last manager and everything like that.
It's the just, hope that kills you. Yeah. Well, on that very important note, we're going to be celebrating Independent Bookshop Week with Linden Books' very own Jill Hart in a few seconds. So, Ben, would you like to put those last two questions to Ian Lennox? Because I don't think you're going to speak to each other again on the same show, probably until September.
Oh.
That's not because we're banning Ian. Ian will be back. But, you know,
it's
we'd
just
have to...
me, I'm disappearing.
I'd like to say Ian could, of course, contribute like Phil Leonis via Skype, but, you know, with Ian then computers, it's not going to happen, really.
Really?
It's,
you
know, it's...
got no idea.
Exactly.
It still could be worse. It could be a Sunderland fan. But, we'll gloss over. Ian, have you had an interesting head of look at Olympus today?
Short but sweet, yes.
Excellent. And will you be joining us again next week? Or week after, perhaps, actually, Lincolnshire show.
Yeah, Lincolnshire show next week. So, actually, unless we see you at the Lincolnshire show, Ian, it's not going to happen either, we'll be seeing you in 2 weeks from now. Having said that, that's just for this show. For another show, the World Cup Predictor Challenge, available on podcast only, we'll be with you on Monday. Take care now.
Okay, man.
See you later. That's a whole lot.
Next week, of course, it is Independent Bookshop Sellers Week. I always get it confused. Jill Hart from Linden Books, you'll be able to keep us right there. What do we actually call next week, apart from Lincolnshire Show Weekend? Or is it the week after? I don't know. When is Independent Booksellers Week?
Independent Booksellers Bookshop Week is from the 16th to the 23rd of June, Alex.
Yes, so it is next week. So we're right on that.
It is, yeah.
Marvellous. As I say, that and the Lincolnshire Show, there's so much crazy goodness that's going on. Of course, as Sasha from Linden Books has actually pointed out, the sort of things you do at Linden Books carry on year in, year out, week in, week out, not just for Independent Bookshop Sellers Week.
That's right. I think all independent bookshops have always got a lot of exciting things happening for people, but this is a particular week that focuses our attention. It's part of the campaign, the Books Are My Bag campaign, which is a is a week to celebrate everything that we do in the UK, in Ireland, in independent bookshops. And the campaign is run by the Booksellers Association and its members. So it's something that everybody all over the country is getting involved in.
Which is wonderful. This week, in case you're wondering, it's World Meat Free Week. And after the news, we'll be listening to Jay McGuinness from The Wanted talking about how Meat Free Week has actually expanded to all sorts of other bits and pieces. It's a joy. We'll also be talking about reverse apartheid in South Africa. And Michaela Strachan, I believe, will be sort of making an appearance. Or maybe not. Maybe we'll just see what happens. Jan Cronier will be talking with Fiona Moore. But let's move back to yourself, Jill, because that's the reason we're actually with you at this moment. It's why we've reduced various other contributors like Richard Fitzwilliams and Ian Lennox, because we thought it's time Jill Hart got some airspace to work through little bits and pieces. This Friday, 15th of June, at Linden Books. I'll just do a quick check here. Christian, do you know where Linden Books actually is?
I have to admit, I don't.
Unbelievable.
I know, I'm sorry.
Ben Lewis.
No, I have a feeling it might be up by the Bell Gates.
Yeah, exactly. You remember where we had that public relations gig at the White Hart a few months ago when you turned up from there? As you were making our way to the White Hart, directly opposite the White Hart, number 4, Bale Gate, Lincoln, is the amazing Linden Books.
I know where it is. Yep.
Yeah, it's worth a visit. Make sure you pay a visit because so many exciting things there. This Friday, of course, a talk and signing from the author of The Illumination of Ursula Flight. Isn't that right, Jill?
That's right. We have Anna-Marie Crowhurst joining us in the shop. Anna-Marie is a freelance journalist. She's been a columnist for 15 years, contributing to things such as The Times, The Guardian, Time Out, Newsweek, Emerald Street and Stylist. So she's quite well known in the world of journalism, but this is her debut novel. It's a fun read. It's set against the world of the Restoration era theatre, and the history is good. It's a good historical novel, but it's a light-hearted touch, and it's a really good, fun romp of a read. And we like it very much. Sasha and I have both read the book. I'm very passionate about it.
Have you ever dreamt of becoming a famous playwright and then escaping your family expectations into a giddy world of the theatre, Jill?
I haven't, but having read this book, I really wish I had, because it was great fun.
Well, there we are. If you want to actually meet Anna-Marie Crowhurst, it's a mere £4. £4.
And we'll give you a glass of wine as well.
Or a soft drink, because, you know, clearly you could work it out. The Book of the Month Reading Group. Now, this is an interesting one, because it's day one of the Lincolnshire Show next Wednesday, 20th of June. It's also the return of Sam Stone, David J. Howe and company for another edition of the Stone Tapes, as far as Siren Radio is actually concerned. We do a pre-recording from that point of view. And you've got Matt Hay, Reasons to Stay Alive, being the subject of the Book of the Month Reading Group at Linden Books on the 20th of June at 7 p.m.
We're 4 years old now. We decided it was time that we held a reading group, and we pick a book every month that we're really passionate about. There's nothing to do with an event, nothing to do with a new title, something that we really feel we would like to share with people, and that we do share with people. And the Matt Haig book is a memoir that's come guide dealing with his own anxiety and depression and his way through that. But it's a light read, it's not a heavy read, but it's something we prescribe to a lot of people, and we very much like people to come along and discuss it with us. It's a free event, but we do need you to book in with us, because we're obviously limited to space for numbers.
Although it's, I mean, you've got 3 floors there, lots of magical spaces you can actually occupy. I remember.
Also, of course, we have our story time on Tuesday the 19th, which has got specific resonance this week, because the book of the Books of My Bag campaign focus for Independent Bookshop Week is The Tiger Who Came to Tea, which is a children's book that many people know.
Do you know, this is quite interesting, because The Tiger Who Came to Tea is also, clearly because of Independent Bookshop Sellers Week, being focused at the Book Corner with Jenna Warren in Saltburn-on-Sea. A little bit further north, but it's all connected. You were nodding, Ben, with Tiger That Came to Tea. Is that one of your
book I was very familiar with when I was younger,
Right.
Oh, I loved it. I really enjoyed it.
So on Tuesday the 19th, between 10 and 11 o'clock, we'll have the lovely Kirsty from Rhubarb Theatre coming to us in the shop, and she's going to be doing The Tiger Who Came to Tea.
Well, I mean, Christian, clearly, you know,
we still have a few places spare for that.
I was going to say, Christian, clearly this has got to be the number one thing for you. I mean, you know, at a loose end on Tuesday as a journalism undergraduate, you know, clearly you're going to check out, you know, Rhubarb.
And well, I remember that book as well when I was a child. Yeah, that and the was it the Hungry Caterpillar as well? And they're ones that I grew up. Yeah.
The Hungry
and,
Caterpillar.
And the Books in My Bag campaign, Independent Book Week people have provided us with a number of copies of a lovely book bag with The Tiger Who Came to Tea on it. And those books will, those bags will be free for, with anybody attending the story time who buys a book, will get one of those bags free. And during and from that day, anybody who spends over £15 on children's books will get one of those bags free, as long as the stocks last. We've obviously got not a huge amount, but while we've got them, we want to share those with all our children's readers.
So, and presumably the bags are reusable. It's not, I mean, they're not plastic bags, are they?
They're a lovely cloth. A lovely cloth book bag.
Ah, so, I mean, you could carry your devices with pride, really, from that point of view. I would say books, but these days it's all... No, it's not device. Of course, you go to the Linden Books to actually buy books, not actually sort of say, can you download that for me, please? Sacrilege. Okay, other thing I wanted to mention, of course, coming up at the end of June, Tuesday the 26th of June, it's Ben Lewis's namesake, Ben Kane, who's going to be present, a popular writer of historical fiction, focusing on the first book in his new Roman series. Hannibal has been defeated and Rome, seeking new conquests, turns its eyes on the cradle of democracy, which is Greece, Ben.
Interesting.
Yes, Ben Kane is a very popular Roman fiction writer. We've had an event with him before. He's very popular. I think when I checked on the charts in the Sunday papers, he's heading up the charts with this one as well. So it's going to be a really good evening. Again, a few tickets left for that one.
So we can say that Ben Kane saw and conquered.
He can.
Maybe not. Questions for yourself for the awesome Jill Hart from Linden Books. Christian, any thoughts? Almost fell off the chair with the awesomeness of speaking to you, Jill. That's the sort of line. Sorry, she doesn't bite much.
The chair almost went then. It sounds like I'm definitely going to check it out anyway, because I have been meaning to get some new books anyway, so I'm definitely going
to
come.
Come and see us, Ben. Exactly. We'd be very happy to help you choose.
I will do, yeah.
This is Christian you've been speaking to. Easily confused, obviously. But I'd hate Ben Lewis to go off to London realising that somebody was actually impersonating him at Linden Books. About it. So, hi, I'm Ben. We spoke on air. Yeah, oh, yes, yeah. Yes. That's what it's all about. Meanwhile, back with Ben. Any thoughts from yourself?
I'd certainly go and look at it in the future. I won't be around, unfortunately, next week. But
in time for the Lincoln Book Festival.
Oh, yeah, I'll be around then, so I'll definitely pay a visit.
I think Phil Hanlon-Williams is keenly looking forward to being part of that.
And to come along.
Linden will be... in fact, Linden, I believe, will also be hosting... aspects of Phil Hanlon-Williams' work on ordnance.
Yes. Very interesting.
We're going to be doing an event after as well at the collection with Phil, which is going to be... I'm flicking through my diary here now to spot the exact date.
I know.
On Friday the 17th of August, to go with the exhibition at the collection. We're going to be having a book talk for Phil as well then, so he'll be able to talk in some depth on show slides, etc., about the book. So that's another opportunity to come and see him.
You can take a look at Linden Books on Facebook and on Twitter. What are the hashtag handles, Jill?
That I don't know.
Yeah, see, Jill Hart.
I'm not a modern person, exactly.
This is why you were so wonderfully bookended, no pun intended, with Ian Lennox there from that point of view. Now, check out Linden Books. Just go into Facebook. It's Linden Books. Link them, obviously, and you work through that process. And you can also go to lindenbooks.co.uk. The email is info@lindenbooks.co.uk. Linden Books, of course, based 4 Balegate, Lincoln. Jill Hart, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have indeed, Alex.
And for the benefit of the Lincoln listener, there's no relation between yourself and the White Hart. It's not a case of, White Hart was indeed my long-lost brother. You know, so it's,
no, it wasn't.
So just wanted
but they
to
are very
that.
Good friends.
Or indeed,
friendly neighbours.
Or indeed, Johnny Hart, former manager of Manchester City. Sorry, I had to squeeze in another reference there, Ben, but what the heck. Back in the day. So, Jill, will you be coming back and joining us again in the not-too-distant future?
I would love to, Alex, very much.
Excellent. After the news, we'll give you the full rundown in terms of what's happening. We've got Jay McGuinness from World Meat Free Week. We've got Jan Cronier talking about reverse apartheid. And we've got Phil Buckle from Electrical Safety First. If you want to listen to Tessa Snott interviewing and having a chat with her all-time idol, Michaela Strachan, the person who was responsible for making Tessa the woman she is today. You can listen to that as a special that's going out on a podcast. It's already out there. It's been published, so it's there. And also the next Sound and Country Vision, I believe. Christian, have you enjoyed the programme?
I have. Yeah. It's been very good.
Ben?
I've very much enjoyed it, thank
good.
You.
We're going to be chatting with John Barnes tomorrow. That's
indeed.
Exciting. We'll have had a first World Cup match there. We're looking forward to England and a variety of other bits and pieces as well. Jill is about to say farewell, I'm sure, but I want you to join us collectively in this. For this part of the programme, at least, could we say au revoir? A one, a two, a three?
Au revoir. Au revoir. Au
revoir. So we turning up, yeah, we turning it up. Ain't got no tears in my body, I ran up, but boy, I like it, I like it, I like it. Don't matter how, what, when, who tries it, we out here.